Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to watch movies and series and talk about them with my friends that work here. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? Top of the morning, fellas.
What's up, birthday boy?
Birthday boy. Birthday boy. Happy birthday, man.
Ach, thanks, man.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's lovely to be here celebrating with you guys.
Yeah.
I was telling Liz last night that when I was a little kid, I used to get excited by like July.
Oh, right.
Right? You know, when your birthday's coming.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
You know, you always go on holiday in July. That was like the big school holiday. Yeah. And then my birthday's in mid-August. Now in my late 30s, it's like, oh shit, it's tomorrow. It's like there's no build-up.
Yeah.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering into our video store. We've got cake today because we are celebrating my birthday. We've got ourselves a Graham.
Hello.
Who is an editor.
Correct.
We're not working at the video store. We've got ourselves a P-Dog.
What up?
A Perrin.
What up?
Who's got one of those annoying little air horn.
Yeah.
Siren.
Yeah.
And what do you do, Perrin? We're not at the video store.
I write, but I mostly what puts bread on the table is I'm a videographer and editor as
The combo.
Yeah.
And my name is Russell. I own The Bioscope.
Yeah.
Which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And we come together once a week to talk about the films and the TV shows that we're watching. Mm-hmm. This is the Clerks episode where it's just us having a fat chat.
Yeah.
We like to kick things off with a little round table game called Hey, Did You Guys See?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to kick it off, P-Dog?
Hey, did you guys see Dominic Sessa is going to play Anthony Bourdain in a biopic movie?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Who is that?
So
I know who Anthony Bourdain is. Yes.
Dominic Sessa was the main kid in The Holdovers, the teenager.
Okay.
He's so great. So I think it's great casting.
That
I think
tracks.
It's obviously going to be, they reckon it's going to be set during Bourdain's like fresh out of culinary school phase of his career.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited for that because Bourdain is like one of my idols. Yeah. I love Bourdain. Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning who he is. He's a famous chef.
Yeah,
he did great TV shows where he would like travel to like weird obscure places and like explore the culture and the food and stuff. But like he did it in not like a you know, Jamie Oliver, Gordon Ramsay kind of way. He would be like very like, there was a very punk rock mentality about
it. Yeah, there was a sort of rock starness to his persona.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
I think he was doing this sort of thing before.
Yeah.
Before it was a commodified thing where that's what you have to do, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you're doing a cooking show, you have to go to strange places and
eat strange
food.
Yeah, Parts Unknown was one of his shows.
I think he did it first.
Yeah. No, he was great. Like, and he's a bloody good writer as well. Mm. I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
I think it's still on Netflix, but there's a documentary about him called Roadrunner.
Okay.
And it's phenomenal. Like, really fantastic. And it's just a documentary about him.
Yeah, because he is no longer with us.
Yeah.
Yes.
How did he die?
I think he killed himself.
I think he took his own life.
Yeah, that's
so he
really
was a troubled soul.
Yeah.
He was a troubled soul, and I think that's what's added to a bit of an enigma around him.
Mm.
One of those like gone too soon
sort
of figures. But the actor that you're mentioning was in a movie called The Holdovers, which was a little Oscar darling at the beginning
so great.
Of this year.
Oh my God.
But most importantly, it was set in the school.
Yes.
Paul Giamatti plays the teacher that's got to look after the school over a winter break where everyone goes home.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever has to stay, because in theory their parents don't love them enough, he has to look after them. They did a casting of school kids because they wanted a very genuine person.
Okay.
That was his first role.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
He's really good.
And
he
gives this incredible performance. So it's so cool that from this springboard, he's able to do cool stuff and he's able to work now, which is exciting.
Yeah, the director is Matt Johnson, who did Blackberry. So I'm excited for that. I know Cole wasn't a fan of BlackBerry.
I haven't seen it.
I thought it was great fun. The Big Short kind of vibes. I'm excited for that. It'll be very cool.
All right.
Nice.
Hey, did you guys see our friends, The Universe, on stage?
Oh, yes. Ugh.
Are now doing a very big, very cool show in Joburg.
You mentioned this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's worth just mentioning again that on the 13th and the 14th of September, they're going to be performing at the Nelson Mandela Theatre.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
So Universe on Stage is a production, effectively. It's a two-man operation where Luca gives a talk about science, black holes, the universe. It shoots a bit up, so you've got to listen and you learn, and it's about understanding something that perhaps you don't know, but it's not over your head.
Yeah,
the idea is that it's for everyone to understand science and paradigms and black holes. But most importantly, this talk takes place over a live performed score by the other dude in the operation, Yash, who plays piano. Mm-hmm. So it's this beautiful, very original. It started with them playing Hans Zimmer music.
Yes.
But then Yash has composed its own stuff, which is phenomenal. And they put on this show about the universe. And
awesome.
We had them on the show, so dial back in the episodes to get to the Universe on Stage episode so that you can get far more context. But in that, we talk about the fact that these guys want to do more shows and they want to grow and expand and play more, play bigger venues. And I kept saying it sounds like they're a rock band.
Yes.
And this is them doing that.
That's
which
awesome.
Is awesome. So we'll put the ticket link in the description of this episode below.
Yep.
And it's a big mammoth thing. They got to sell like thousands of tickets as opposed to just tens.
Yes.
Tens of tickets.
That's really cool though, hey?
Yeah, like, and I just applaud them doing it. They've asked me to be there on the night to introduce them.
Oh, that's cool.
To moderate a discussion.
That's cool, man.
So I'm very excited for them. And I want to just shout from the rooftop. So let's fill up the dome, so to speak.
Okay. Hey, did you guys know that this year is the 25th anniversary of The Matrix?
Oh, is it 25 years this year?
It's 25 years.
Oh, 1999,
Jesus.
I saw a trailer for like the 25th anniversary screenings. I don't know if anything like that is happening locally.
They did it at IMAX last year.
Really?
Every now and again.
How did I miss that?
Every now and again, these things do come to South Africa, but for the most part, they don't.
But the fact that it's 25 years old just broke my brain.
We should do like a Video Store Presents, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
We should do.
It's not a bad idea.
But a certain way to invent it at the bus.
Let's do a twist. We do from the worst to the best.
So which one would you start with?
Oh, the fourth one. Then the third one.
Yeah, just play them backwards.
Yeah, just play them backwards. Yeah.
What was this last one that came out?
It was this
Resurrections. Yeah, it wasn't for me.
Yeah. I appreciated what they were going for with the whole meta thing, but it fizzled out so quickly.
The first one.
I read a review, like a really well-written review that made me go, okay, for the people who do like it, I understand why.
Yeah, exactly. I understand
why. But I still don't like it myself.
Yeah, I think it was very... The thing with the Wachowskis... I dig their ethos. I dig what they try to do, but there's only two films of theirs that I like: Bound and The Matrix. Those are two great fucking films.
Okay. Yeah, the one that came before Matrix was Bound.
Yeah.
Which is a very
small noir lesbian
movie.
Yeah, it's like it's a queer like noir thriller, and it's like great. It's like very isolated. It's mostly takes place in one apartment, and it's just so smart and so like. I remember when I first watched that movie, like the initial first phase, I was like, it's okay. And then when it like finally clicks in, I'm like, okay, this is really great. Like, it feels like a throwback 50s noir at points, you know.
Yeah. See, I'm a big Speed Racer advocate.
I actually haven't watched Speed Racer. Apparently, I heard it's aged fantastically.
It's just so unique. There's nothing else like Speed Racer.
100%.
Nothing. There's no other movie like it.
You see, that's what I appreciate about the Wachowskis is that they take big swings and often that they miss, in my opinion.
Often they whiff big time.
Yeah, but like, I love what they do. I love what they try to achieve. So yeah, that's cool.
I've been excited about Speed Racer. I want to watch it. That was an adaptation of a comic.
Yeah. Of an anime. Yeah.
And it had Emile Hirsch in it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it looked very large. Very largely
John Goodman.
CGI'd stuff.
Yes, it's like going for a very particular aesthetic.
Yeah, it was like the first movie of its kind like that. Yeah. Like
where they're doing stuff like in 2D animation where stuff is like deliberately on planes.
Yes,
so there's like very flat parallax movements and that sort of thing. It's a really interesting looking film. Even if you don't like the, you know, the whole thing as a package, the look is like so unique.
It's so crazy that you said that you are a big advocate for it, because there is that pocket of people who live and die
like Speed Racer.
They're like, it's fucking amazing. Yeah. It's, as Scorsese would say, pure cinema.
Yeah. Damn straight.
Yeah. Lovely. I don't have many of these. Does anyone have any?
I've got more.
Yeah, cool. Let's go.
Did you guys hear that, or did you guys see that Deadpool and Wolverine overtake Joker as the highest grossing R-rated film ever, which I saw that coming a mile away.
Yes.
It's basically fan service, the movie.
Yeah.
100%. But it does it so well and it's so fun with it as well. So yeah, I'm not surprised by that at all. I don't think Joker Part 2 is going to come near that.
Yeah.
I think the whole, apparently it's not a straight out musical. I think it's ballsy to go and be a musical. Mm. We'll see if it's either going to be amazing or awful.
Yes.
Let's go step by step. The one is Deadpool was, the first Deadpool was the highest grossing R-rated film of all time.
Yeah.
When that happened, I think everyone caught a wake up and was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Just because it's R-rated doesn't mean it can't be successful.
Yeah, exactly.
You always get the feeling that the studios are trying to dilute its violence or its language
so that more people can
watch it so that they think it can be more successful. But what we're learning, and I think in a previous episode said this, that if you compromise its authenticity, it can fail. And so Deadpool was that surprising success, and then no doubt, you know, this new one was going to do exactly that, and then as you said, Joker did hold it for a while, and now we've got part two coming in October, and it looks interesting, and I think people love to speculate, and so in that is people saying apparently it's a musical,
there are musical numbers in it at least,
I'd imagine there's going to be these sequences,
But I
don't know whether the whole movie will be that. But I think it's going to be interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, I think because I know it's uncool to say I enjoyed the first Joker, but like I enjoyed the first Joker.
No,
even though
this big, successful, great movie.
Yeah,
it was really good. It won Oscars.
Yeah, the score is phenomenal on that. But like the thing with Joker is, I totally see that it wears its influences on its sleeve. It's what's the word when it's like it does borrow or steal a lot?
Homage?
No, not homage, but like it's basically
pastiche.
No, I can't remember the name. But
I'm
like
calling on all my film school.
But like it's straight up. It's the king of comedy.
Yeah,
Taxi Driver.
Sure,
just with clown face.
Yes.
You know, it's. But I still enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, it was a great film, and I think it took everyone by surprise because technically it lived in this superhero world, but it wasn't the schlocky superhero movie we'd seen for the last 20 times in Marvel.
Yeah, exactly.
It was darker. It had some credibility because it won Oscars.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, has a superhero movie won that many Oscars? Maybe?
It's been nominated. I mean,
Dark Knight got close to having some credibility, but for the most part, they've never been darling films or acclaimed.
I mean,
films.
It won Golden Lion at Venice. That's a massive deal. Yeah. Like, and if you win Best Picture at Venice, your chances of winning Best Picture at the Oscars is higher than actually. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. And I watched, I struggled to sleep last night. So I was up at about 2 a.m. watching stuff. And I watched a great little thing on the, you know, those sort of top tens, top fives, or you know, those lists, those YouTube
Watch
lists.
Mojo.
That kind of vibe. And it was the films coming out that are either going to be incredible or suck. And the argument was like, these are filmmakers that,
probably
you know, do really well or they have had misses.
Yes.
Or, but it was basically like a list of big swings.
Yeah, right. Like Megalopolis,
yeah,
Joker,
there were a few of those, but Joker was on that list where it was like, this is either going to be a home run or...
Do you know what
stick the land.
Sorry, I will wrap up Joker now, but like what I appreciate about them potentially making that a musical is it is like a ballsy move. Like all the neckbeards are like, I hate musicals, I will not watch it, you know, but like I think it's such an interesting move. Like if it is successful, amazing. If it isn't, I appreciate the risk in taking that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
One thing we spoke about was, you know, perhaps they've been given too much money.
The first
Joker.
Yeah, I made so much money, jeez.
But like it was a small budget, little indie film. It had the look. It was like a
$50, $60 million budget.
Which in this day and age is like nothing.
Yeah, and this new one is $250 million.
Like, yeah, so it had the...
It must be massive set pieces, eh? Holy cow.
It had the feeling of being indie and small. And then what's so lovely is that when that indie is done well...
Yeah.
It can blossom and just be so successful.
Yeah, 100%.
And something we spoke about earlier is that was kind of similar to what Miller did with Mad Max.
Oh, yeah.
Where Fury Road had a feeling of being this kind of small punk rock endeavor. And it's like, you don't give that guy too much money. Like, let him be creative with a small budget.
Yeah, 100%.
And then you only stand to win. Like, don't forget, like, punk rock... is punk rock. It's grimy, it's dirty, it comes from that necessity of making do with the budget that you have.
Yeah,
100%. You don't give a punk rock band a slick album.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't give them like millions of dollars to go record a new album.
Yeah.
It's not gonna be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sex Pistols laugh at Wembley.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Hey. Cool. Any other ones? Because there are some nice movies we can start talking about.
Hey, cool. Did you guys see they're releasing a cut of the latest Planet of the Apes movie, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, called the Raw Cut, which has no visual effects in it. It's all the, like the mocap, like all of that stuff in it. They've just like, it's just like the basic cut of the film before doing any of the visual effects.
When are they releasing that?
It's coming on like the disc for like the Blu-ray.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very cool.
It's just so, it's like, why?
That's a cool bonus feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think they would do that?
I think people have been like saying for years, I would love to see what these movies like this look like without the visual effects.
Yeah.
To see how they're actually made.
Yeah.
To see what they're actually doing on set and that sort of thing.
Take a peek behind the curtain, so to speak.
Yeah. And also perhaps get a sense of how much acting the actors do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was something we've also started debating, which I think is a lovely ongoing conversation, which is, if you are an actor that does a motion capture job, who gets the Oscar? Do you get an Oscar?
It's,
and what's the
fix?
What's that going to be in the future?
It sucks because you look at, I mean, in my opinion, Andy Serkis's work as Caesar on the previous trilogy is the greatest CGI character like performance in movies.
And so the question is, how much of that is him?
It's like, yeah, that's true. But like, I mean, that performance is just, it's such a shame that those, I don't think any of those movies won special effects.
I don't think so, which is wild.
Especially the last one, which like photorealistic. It's insane. Exactly. There are moments where you're like, that's an orangutan saying Caesar, you know. I'm convinced, you know. But that's wild, man.
Yeah.
That's a cool special feature.
Yeah, it's nice to see those. And then it's also nice to mention the fact that there are still Blu-rays coming out.
Yeah.
And I know you, Perrin, are one of the people I know that still orders and collects this physical media.
Because in this country, you have to import them.
They printed them at one stage here, and then they just stopped.
Yeah,
I could see how that market is very largely dead for the mainstream.
Because
your average Joe now just pays $100 and gets Netflix. And certainly doesn't seek out physical media. But it's cool that there's guys like yourself that are collecting these special edition DVDs or Blu-rays, and they're packaged in very cool ways.
Yeah.
It's very similar to hearing the fact that there's like Taylor Swift fans that are buying her vinyls, even though they don't have a record player.
Yes.
They want to hold something physical.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting how it's certainly not going to be the mainstream, but that there is still this want to hold something physical.
No, it's great. Exactly. I mean, because I don't want to say I was there when the vinyl resurgence you know, just before it happened, you know.
Yeah.
But like, it's cool to see that people, it's in the same mindset of people wanting to buy books because they like to hold it and read it, and it's malleable and it's tangible, you know.
How interesting is it that the video store, for the most part, doesn't exist anymore? The CD store doesn't exist.
Yeah.
No, you know,
we witnessed the end of music.
It's now record stores, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the record stores still remain, but bookstores are going strong.
Yeah,
like it's the Kindle. Wild. The Kindle never killed the bookstore.
Yes.
And it's great to see, man. Like it's books like are legitimately forever at this point. Like with movies and stuff. I mean, it's physical media at least. It's fighting back. I know people are like, oh, no, it's all going to be digital and blah, blah, blah. But the great thing about physical media, there's still a collector market. There's still boutique labels who license titles from the Foxes and the Disneys and stuff like that. I mean, you got labels like Criterion, Arrow, Eureka, Second Sight make the best boutique deluxe editions, in my opinion.
But they have these extra things.
Yeah, and they have
like,
these
where else are you going
extras?
To see that version of Kingdom of the Planet?
And the great thing is it's always the filmmakers who spearhead the extras as well. So a lot of these special boutique ones as well, they get the filmmakers involved because they want their films to live on. And I regard buying physical media as a form of film preservation because... If, on streaming, stuff gets taken down, right? Yeah. Then it just, I want to watch this movie. Oh, I can't rent it anymore. I can't find it on Netflix. It's gone.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, at least with a movie, I can pop it on whenever I want, you know?
Lovely, guys. Let's move on to the movies that we watched.
Tell me
last
about
week.
Blink Twice.
I really want to get into it. Should we start with Blink Twice and then we'll chat more about Alien?
I want to know about
Romulus. All right, so last week I went to Hyde Park twice. Jesus, there was a point where I was like, sure, I'm beginning to become part of the furniture here. But we, as the video store, get invited to these special premieres. They all come in different shapes and sizes, as we've mentioned before. We all started going proactively to more of them with the video store.
Yeah.
But then when the Bioscope upgraded at the start of this year, we are now in the position as a cinema to screen these kinds of movies. Mm-hmm. Basically, we did this technical upgrade. And why I'm telling you this whole story, because it all plays into Blink Twice. We upgraded to this big fancy projector system where we can screen day and day releases like other cinemas. And it involves these movies coming in these hard drives. And I love going to these screenings to check whether or not my decisions in programming the Bioscope are correct. Most of the time, 9 times out of 10, it's a film I've chosen, and now's my chance to watch it. And I can sit there going, awesome, I made the right choice. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be great. When I watched Widow Clicquot, I was marking down all the times that they drank champagne, planning whether or not there could be a drink-along version to the movie. You know, so it's like I can go in and watch these. Sometimes I watch these films and I'm like, this is a cool film or it's a stonker.
Yeah.
But it's not for the Bioscope.
Stonker, I love that.
So sometimes it's been a perfectly great film.
Yes.
But I'm like, it's just not a Bioscope film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad I didn't choose it.
Okay.
I went with P-Dog.
What's up?
We had a little date last week and we went to go watch Blink Twice, which was a film that had cropped up in amongst all the other films.
Yeah.
It felt a bit chaotic and it felt like I hadn't quite sunk my teeth into what it was.
Yeah, I avoided trailers even. Oh.
No, well, I didn't even avoid them. I just didn't get a chance to properly watch. Yeah. I got a sense of it. But by the end of this movie, I was like, I fucked up. This is a Bioscope movie.
Yeah, it's a cool movie.
And I've missed it. So what it is, it's the writing and directing debut of Zoe Kravitz.
Okay.
The daughter of Lenny Kravitz.
Yes.
Who is a cool person.
Yeah.
You just get the sense
she's very cool. Yeah, she's
like,
super
in
cool.
Every way. Like, if your dad is Lenny Kravitz, I don't know how you could be uncool. So her choices in her career have always been great.
Okay. She's in The Batman, she's Catwoman, she's in Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, she's one of the wives. You know, yeah.
They rebooted High Fidelity as a TV show with her.
I like that. Hey.
You know,
yeah.
And these decisions are good and smart, and you just get the sense that she doesn't just say yes to everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so she's made this movie called Blink Twice.
Okay.
Blink Twice, our main protagonist is a cocktail waitress. Not, you know, wildly attractive.
Yeah.
Not wildly successful. Just a kind of average person, so to speak. And she attends she has to work a cocktail party that is all in honor of Channing Tatum's character.
Okay.
Who,
eccentric billionaire. Yeah.
Who's this crazy billionaire, this tech billionaire.
Right.
But a handsome one, not just a nerdy Zuckerberg. He's like a charming.
He's beefed up, yeah.
You know, charismatic guy. You immediately get the sense he's made some mistake.
Right.
Yeah. That he's apologizing for. You don't quite know what it is. But he is apologizing and he's gone into hiding.
Okay.
So to speak. He's taken himself out of the public eye. But he does mention the fact that he has this island.
Right.
He's bought an island. Cut to this cocktail party that our character and her friend are attending. And they get the chance to meet him.
Right.
And hang out with him. They sneak into the sort of after party after they finished working. And they get invited to his island. And so the movie takes place on this island.
Mm.
And you can get a sense from the trailer, and I don't want to take it too far, and I don't want to give too much away.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you get the sense that day after day on this island, things are fucking out.
Okay.
She's struggling to remember what's going on. She's finding dirt under her fingernails, but she doesn't know.
Right.
She's losing her sense of time and what's going on, and things are getting fucking weird.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the premise.
Right.
So it's all set on this island.
She goes with her best friend.
She goes with her best friend, and it's what seemingly paradise becomes this nightmare.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But what we can mention and what we can get into is, and one of the best ways to sell it to you, is that it's got a very similar intellect, commentary, sharpness as a film like Get Out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is like the psychological thriller. So yes. Nobody think it's not a horror.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got horror elements. It's got horror elements. It's horror adjacent more.
But it's a thriller and it's a psychological thriller. So it's very much set in her head. And what I love is you know, when you watch a movie about magicians, the movie has to be a magic show.
Yes.
Right? So the movie in its construct has got the setup, the payoff, the fuck with you, the reveal, these kinds of things. So a psychological thriller that gets more and more fucked up and weird and confusing has to be fucked up and confusing when you watch it.
Yes.
So it's edited very successfully.
The editing's
in that
phenomenal.
Way, where you get given these scenes where you're like, what is that? What's going on? And even the characters are like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And then you realize how this all comes back.
When,
and there's characters that tell her certain things, and you're like, what does that mean? What's going on? So you're confused.
Yes.
In a cool way, and it all pays off.
Okay.
Yeah, the breadcrumbs set up in the movie is like really smart. It's like a really smartly written and set up film. You can see every element. You could see there were a lot of going back to the drawing, like in a good way, you know what I mean? Like there were lots of rewrites where she was like, okay, no, I've got to make this clearer. I've got to make this more abstract. I've got to make this, you know.
It's an editor's dream.
It's so good. Like the buildup is, it takes long.
Okay.
But once it clicks into gear, it's like worth it. Because I remember at one point I was like, yo, the buildup, like when, because we know what's going to happen, but when is that going to arrive?
Right.
And when it does, it just snowballs.
Okay.
And it's just Naomi Aki, who plays the lead, she is phenomenal in it. Everyone's so
she's
good
really
in it.
She's really good, and she's got such a like expressive face as she's trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, and Channing Tatum's phenomenal in it.
He's good. He's so charming.
Yeah, he's so charming and scary when he needs to be as well.
Okay.
And so as I said, it's very similar to Get Out in the sense that Get Out was the Jordan Peele film that came out many years ago, which was a lovely psychological thriller, but it was able to poke at issues of racism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was able to, in this supernaturally kind of crazy psychological thriller framework say something about racism and people's perceptions of black people and all sorts of things. This is a movie that has a very similar approach, but it's the themes of Me Too.
Yeah,
it's sexism. The themes of the patriarchy. It's the themes of, you know, powerful men
the
and
white
their control
knights.
Over women, gaslighting.
Yeah.
You know, right. It's such a great way for you to feel the sense of gaslighting, which is like, you know, am I right here?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Do you know what?
Is this correct? Or am I just in this whirlwind where I'm confused as to whether or not this is right or wrong?
Yeah. Yes. I think it's a great companion piece to something like Get Out and Promising Young Woman. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like where the whole, like you said, it's discusses the ideas of what is right and what is wrong. Like I remember there's a moment, it's in the trailer, where two of the girls are speaking, where the lead is speaking to another one, and she's like, we got into a plane with a bunch of strangers, what were we thinking? A bunch of rich, good-looking strangers, what were we thinking?
And they were sort of caught up in the chaos and the, you know, and there's also this lovely play on the power of celebrity and being in the, being in the orbit of these people.
Right.
That comes up so nicely in the Netflix TV show Dirty Pop. This con man was able to get away with so much crooked shit because he was linked to famous people.
Mm.
This was the guy who put NSYNC and Backstreet Boys together. Yes. So what he was actually doing in real life was creating these Ponzi schemes and collecting all this money.
Yeah.
But he was enabling it by going, hey, do you want to meet a Backstreet Boy?
Yeah.
And these senators or wealthy businessmen were like, oh, yeah, my daughter can take a photo with them and, yeah, I'll give you money. So it just shows you like how you get confused by the sense of success or what's going on. And, it's lovely.
Yeah.
So I want to point out a few things, which I think is interesting. One thing that stuck with me is, as we said, there's this commentary on taking advantage of women and women being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Zoe Kravitz's mom was the woman from
High Fidelity. Yeah.
And she was linked to the Cosby Show.
Oh, no ways.
Wasn't she?
I think you're right. Yeah. Let me check. I'm checking right now.
I can't remember who that is. She was in the cast of the Cosby Show.
Okay. I can't remember her name.
Okay, Perrin can just double check.
Lisa Bonet. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, so she was in the Cosby Show. She was one of the younger kids, right?
Must have been, because that was
she
an
wasn't
80s
the mom.
Show.
Till you now. Hold.
So while Perrin is fact-checking me, you've got Zoe Kravitz, whose mom and lineage comes out of one of the more crazy sort of things, where the very thing that made her successful is now shrouded by the legacy of a man who took advantage of women.
Yeah.
And so you could see how in 2024, a smart, very capable, and equipped woman, Zoe Kravitz, would make a film like this.
Yes.
It doesn't come from nowhere.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that has all played into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. So she was on the Cosby Show. But yeah, I think one thing that's interesting as well about Channing Tatum's role in this is that, so him and Zoe Kravitz are engaged.
Yeah, so
and
that's also important.
It doesn't ever feel like, you know, a bit of nepotism where like, oh, I'll just cast my boyfriend or my hubby, you know. He plays that role so well. You know, he leans into it. He has fun with it, and he also takes it seriously. The movie does so well in the humor. Like, the Get Out was quite, there was a lot of funny elements to it.
Yeah,
yeah, but Jordan Peele is a comedian, and so this is also quite similar.
There's a lot of great humor in it, but also it knows when to be serious. It knows when to fuck with your head. It knows when to make you laugh.
Okay.
And it never feels like it's forcing boxes to be ticked, like, okay, we've got this you know, this cliche, it always feels very intentionally directed and very very smart. I mean, the use of camera language in it is really, really interesting, and Zoe Kravitz
is very impressive as a first-time filmmaker.
Exactly.
Like, so impressive.
And so, based on all this particular language that Perrin is choosing to use, you can imagine how I was sitting in this room going, oh my God, this should be at the Bioscope.
Yeah, 100%.
Yes. So it opens in small amounts of cinemas on the 23rd. So we actually have a week head start on this. Okay. So in the week that this episode is released, it's not this Friday, it's the next Friday.
Yes.
23rd,
And I had to go to the distributor and say, I've missed this one. Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't give you a heads up on this. It was out of sheer ignorance that I didn't know this film was this good. Yeah. I didn't even...
Yeah.
I didn't... it was too small to even get my attention and have me choose not to say no. And so the lovely people at Empire were like, oh, shit, there's not many of these physical drives that get made. The main chains... have a all digital system that downloads and sends to all the Sturkinicors and those bigger New Metro chains. They have this way of disseminating this.
Yeah.
But for the smaller film sites like myself, it's physical drives.
Yeah.
And there were only two.
Oh wow!
That were made, and he was like, they're both out.
Right.
As in, they've been sent out for these other sites to ingest.
Yes.
One has gone to Zim, which I think
is
kind of cool.
That's very cool.
I don't know what cinema took Blink Twice and Zim. That's cool. And the other one went to the Monte Cassino chain.
Right.
Okay.
They're called At Movies.
Yeah.
It's Monte.
That makes sense.
And
it's massive.
A few others, you know, those are run by the casino company. They used to be New Metro sites, but now they're their own. And so it involved me going to Monte Cassino to see the manager to get this drive to bring it back to the bioscope. And while we are busy chatting right now, the film is ingesting into the bioscope so that I can screen it.
It might pop up as we speak.
like just shoots onto the screen.
No, but it's exciting that I could turn this thing around.
Yes.
I want to shout from the rooftops that it's good.
Yeah, it's great.
So we'll probably only be able to take it in its second week because I didn't have the space for it. But
you've got it, which is
important.
But
I've got it, and it is going to screen at the bioscope, and I think it'll just be such a fun... movie as well.
I think it's gonna be a sleeper hit.
Exactly. Really, so that's why I'm not afraid to take it in week two, because there needs to be a little bit of talk. Once people see it, they'll realize how good it is, word will get around, and then we'll be one of the few sites that'll screen it, which is cool. So
that's
perhaps have this cool little head start on
Man.
So that's worth mentioning.
Definitely.
Perhaps one thing we can chat about now is Alien Romulus.
Alien Romulus.
That's
For those who tune in every week, you got a real treat last week. You got Cole and Graham having this unbridled two-hour chat. I love how one of our good fans, Alistair, comments in the Instagram and just goes, 2 hours, noise. we did the deep dive into the Alien franchise, and of course we didn't mention Romulus.
Yes.
At that point.
We hadn't seen it yet.
We hadn't seen it at the time of you guys recording that, but we have since seen it.
Uh-huh.
It is in cinemas now.
Yes.
Perrin, you went to go watch it?
Yesterday,
Yeah.
Okay.
And what do we think?
So, Prometheus and Alien Covenant very much serve as like prequels to Alien. They kind of live in that space. This is very much in the vein of legacy sequels that we're getting these days. You know, a lot of movies that came out, you know, Twisters, another legacy sequel, Top Gun Maverick, you know, all these movies that are like picking up from franchises that have been around for a long time.
It's kind of a soft reboot.
Yeah, it's kind of a soft reboot. And this is the one that's most directly a sequel to the first Alien.
Yeah.
And it's picking up a lot of cues from Alien. It's picking up a lot from, surprisingly, from the entire franchise. I was not expecting it to be as connected to the rest of it as it was.
And so that runs a risk of being... not its own thing.
Exactly.
Too nostalgic. Can it live in its own world?
This was kind of my notes, is that I wished it invented more as opposed to remixing.
I agree.
It kind of remixes a lot of the franchise as opposed to like giving us something new. Because something about those first, especially the first four, is as much as them are big swings and big misses, they're all kind of playing in their own space. They're all like really unusual, different films from each other.
Yeah.
And each has a very unique tone.
Yeah,
for better and for worse, frankly.
True,
So you can imagine the filmmaker going into this going, you know, I have to be true to the franchise and yes. I have to be give the right homage and nods.
Exactly.
But you could potentially get lost in that.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's still a cool film.
I do like solid. It. Yeah. I think it's cool. It's the kind of movie that I realize I'll probably like more on a second viewing.
I agree.
Because I'm a big believer in like rewatching movies to kind of be on their wavelength.
100%.
As yeah, opposed to being on yours. Because often we will bring in like expectations to films.
Yeah.
So if you can go into a film with expectations of your own and it's not what you think it's going to be or want it to be, yeah. it can often be like, okay, Blink I don't twice. Actually like no. this.
Yeah, Blink Twice would be a great film to watch again. Because yeah. now okay. that you know where it's going and what it's doing,
yes.
it's going to give you something amazing the second time around.
Yes.
There's a great argument, which is, what is Deadpool and Wolverine going to be like the yeah. second time around? Like, once the load has been splurted, so to speak, like, could it be as fun the second time yeah. around? Because it was all about
those the fan cameos, service yeah. jizz,
exactly. You know? Yeah, and then I feel like this is a movie that's watching it for what it is as opposed to what I thought it might be or what wanted it to be, I think is going to be a better experience.
Yeah, I agree. So I went in with that same mindset because yes. When I watched Blink Twice with Russ that night before, we bumped into a bunch of the critics who was there at the Romulus screening. One of them obviously is a good friend of the show.
Leon.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. His favorite film of all time is Alien.
Yes.
And he was like freaking out about it. He's like, but then he stopped midway. He's like, wait, don't listen to me. Go in, think you're like, watch it because you want to watch it.
Yeah, don't let my excitement sway you.
Yeah, so yeah. unfortunately it did like sway yeah. me a little because Cole freaked out about Romulus as well. Yes. This morning when me and Graham arrived, I was like, so what did you think? And Graham's like, I liked it. I didn't love it. And I was the same. I thought it was a solid horror movie. Mm. I agree. It didn't reinvent the wheel too much. I don't think it needed to, but... Mm. I feel like it's the closest to the first Alien, tonally wise,
yes.
vibe wise, griminess wise.
Yeah, it was very punk rock.
Very
and
punk
in
rock,
my
yeah.
very objective mm-hmm. place, because I haven't watched all the Alien
yeah,
movies.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, it's a good solid movie. It's very cool to have the buttons and the old screens.
Yeah,
and,
I love that touch. So it felt like it was in that region.
We're in the future, but we're in the sort of 80s perception yeah, of the future, which yeah. is where those original movies kind of came
yeah.
from.
Yeah.
But I walked out of it with Carl's like, lots of opening and closing of doors, eh? Fuck me.
Yes.
I was like, the whole movie was just them opening and closing doors. I was like, if I'm going to build a spaceship, I'm going to have less doors.
Yeah.
Well, if there were less doors, then they'd be fucked because yeah, those doors saved their asses.
Yeah.
But the one thing I did appreciate about Romulus is there's Alien does well in the whole, this is the ending. No, this is the ending.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like they invented that with the first one, you know? And Romulus, without giving anything away, last bit is a massive swing and I feel it connected and it's so weird and unexpected.
Yes.
Yeah. Like it actually proper like jolted me. I was like, that is
creepy.
Yeah,
you think the movie's over and then you're like, no wait.
Yeah, yes. And I felt that was impressive.
I feel like the movie needed more of that. Like
100%.
Weird stuff needed to start happening earlier and start like setting its own.
Because for me, the weirdest Alien film, it's not including AVP, those are the worst Alien films, like full stop. The worst Alien film for me is Alien Resurrection, but it's also the weirdest.
Yes.
It's Jean-Pierre Jeunet, unhinged. He did Amelie and Delicatessen and stuff.
Weird.
And I still feel he was the wrong director to do that. It should have been Danny Boyle because he was tied to it at the time.
I wouldn't if they offered Peter Jackson
movie. Especially around that time.
Yes. First, they offered David Cronenberg.
That would have been cool. Oh, so that's one thing I dug about Romulus is there were lots of cool body horror elements to it. Which I feel like the Alien series, the only film that really did that was Resurrection, the whole body horror thing.
Mm.
This, I felt there was a grossness to it.
Yes.
And that's what I liked about it.
And that was always what people remember of Alien, which was the fact that this thing could be growing inside your body and bust its way through your chest. I mean, that viscerally has stayed in the consciousness of people.
Yeah,
the chest bursting scene is like it's up there with the Psycho shower scene as some of the most iconic horror scares ever, you know?
It's weird that we call it the chest burster.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't come out of his chest.
That's true.
It comes out of his stomach.
That's true. Yeah.
The whole point
Yeah.
is that it's like a pregnancy thing. It's like meant to be a...
Well, actually... okay, Graham.
It's just weird. Right. I don't know it's true. Yeah, but in this one, not to be like, if this is maybe a minor spoiler, it actually is a chest burst. Yeah. It comes out of the girl's chest. And you can hear it here. You hear the sound of it like hitting the bone.
It's like it's horrible. But that's one thing also I dug is, I mean, there is some VFX in there, but it's largely...
feels very practical.
It's largely practical, which is amazing. That's why it feels closest to the first Alien and to a lesser extent, Aliens, because one thing that grabs me about Aliens, so Alien is a great horror film. Yeah. Aliens is a great action film. Yeah. The aliens in both, the aliens in all of them are totally different. But I love how Alien, it's this tall, creepy, slender creature. Mm. And then Aliens are these stocky men in little rubber outfits. They're like, aliens, you know. But still, Aliens is still a fucking great movie, jeepers.
Mm. Lovely, guys. Thanks for... thanks for a lovely day.
Yes.
I think we need to go.
As he yawns. Every day.
No, it's been awesome, man. And now we get to celebrate.
Yeah.
So let's all go have some drinks.
Birthday boy. Birthday boy. Birthday boy.
Let's go have some drinks and let's have ourselves a good time.
Nice.
Thank you for listening thus far.
Yes.
Our home base is the video store. That's here. That's LA. Sometimes we have a guest episode or a special episode on a Thursday. I'm away this week, so let's take it easy.
Cool.
So we won't have ourselves a guest, but we've got some cool ones lined up.
Nice.
So we are going to do some guest episodes in the future. Those happen every now and again. Otherwise, Tuesday is the day where we do ourselves a nice big fat shift here at the video store, and we get to talk shit with our friends.
Nice. Yay.
All right. So we'll see you guys again next Tuesday.
Yeah, boy.
And we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.